Welcome to Butterflies of Wisdom, everyone. Today with me, I have Colin. And Colin is a brand strategist and an influencer marketer. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm going to throw some interesting questions in there all along the way, just to mix it up a little. So without further ado, I'll let Colin take it away.
Absolutely. Wynn, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be doing this. And I love the work that you're doing. I think that this is a much needed, you know, topic of discussion and podcast in the industry. So congratulations on having put together such a great show. And I'm excited to dig into influencer marketing and whatever else we have to talk about today.
Well, let's see. How would someone build up their Twitter ID to become an influencer? Let's start there. Let's pick this thing off round with the tough question.
Yeah, I like that. Dig right into it. So did you say, like, Twitter specifically or in general, other platforms?
I said Twitter specifically, but we can talk about in general, too.
Sure. Well, a lot of times I like to lay a little bit of a foundation here and kind of go over the idea of the influencer, because it's kind of a new topic. It's kind of a new concept when it comes to marketing for businesses and for brands and for gaining exposure and attention. The thing about it is everyone wants to be, you know, an influencer in this day and age. You know, there's a little bit of pride and self-worth that comes along with a bunch of followers on different platforms, which is cool. But digging a little bit deeper into some of the trends that we're experiencing right now, what we're seeing is, and this should come as no surprise to anyone, what really connects with people are other people. Other people connect more with an audience than a brand name ever would. So we remember people that we meet, but we remember figures and celebrities and whatever, and we find them quite a bit more interesting to pay attention to than, say, you know, a big brand name. I would be more interested in knowing what, I would be more interested in knowing what Warren Buffett was up to than what Berkshire Hathaway was up to. And, you know, I would be more interested in hearing about Elon Musk than I would necessarily in any of his ventures. This is kind of the trend that we've been seeing going on for the past 5-10 years. And right now, we're starting to kind of really see the power of the influencer as somebody that's going to connect much deeper with an audience than a brand name. And it's why even big companies are starting to look at their, you know, CEOs or founders or whoever as sort of influencers, and the companies that have those influencers as CEOs or founders a lot of times do better. I think of in the advertising and marketing space, you know, a company like Gary Vaynerchuk is much more well-known as a personality even than VaynerMedia, which is his company that he runs, but that personality feeds into the business that his company is able to drum up. And the same with Scott Galloway of L2. They both run marketing and advertising firms, but they're really kind of winning now because they've put the power of an influencer at the head of what it is that they're doing. So I think that that's kind of important to lay some groundwork and say, this is what we found to be the case over the past 5 to 10 years, that influencers are kind of the most powerful way to get a message out today because we just find them so fascinating.
I see what you're saying. So it's all about the know, like, and trust factor. And I'm sorry to say this, but Colin is going to absolutely agree with me. People like you better than they like your company.
Yep.
Colin goes a yep. And so when you are talking about your company, you have to remember you're the representation of your company, and you're the representation of your podcast, and you're the representation of your books. So I no one likes to read about your company always. They like to read human industry.
Right.
And so how do we get the human industries out there without seeming too salesy?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question and a really interesting one. You know, so having gone through that whole introduction about, you know, influencers and the power of influencers right now, it is something that you need to be very careful and cautious about is understanding the fine line that you walk between promoting your own personal brand as an influencer and between coming across as always being overly salesy and always pitching something and always telling people that they need to follow you or like whatever. So there's a little bit of a tricky fine line to walk there. I think that what I see working in the wild most of the time when I'm working with influencers or brands who are working at putting an influencer at the front of them, what I see working a lot is that the people who are the most authentic win in this space. So the people who are documenting rather than trying to make it look like something it's not, and the people that aren't trying to make themselves look bigger than they are, but are purely documenting themselves and their journey, because people really want to see that journey. You know, they want to see the hero's journey, right? That we know from fiction and other mediums, the hero's journey of the struggle that leads to ultimate success. And that's what people are really interested in. So we actually lose that hero's journey when we try to make ourselves perfect or seem perfect. When every, you know, picture on Instagram, we spent, you know, 3 hours photoshopping it to look as perfect as possible. We lose that hero's journey because we're not showing any struggle. We're not showing any realness, any authenticness in that. So what I would encourage people to do is to not look at it so much as this constant pitch to, you know, follow me on this platform or, you know, try to get subscribers and likes and followers, but rather to look at it as a documentation of their own hero's journey. And whether you are, you know, at the top of a mountain right now or in the valley, and whether things seem like they're going perfect or whether you've got some really serious struggles, to be honest about, you know, to be honest about all of that, because that's what connects. It's interesting. I have a podcasting client right now who we're looking into the process of creating a failure-based show, because what we found is that with this person's audience, that the failures are what actually connect with people even more than the successes. And it's because of that vulnerability, people connect with somebody who they see that is willing to be vulnerable online and willing to tell the truth, because so many of our, you know, Instagram perfectly curated culture is not willing to be vulnerable at all. So when we see that in the wild and we see people going through things and being honest about what they're going through and being true to themselves, that connects, you know? And I think that's how you win in the long run. And you do gain influence through that, just because that authenticness, that vulnerability and realness really connects with people and will bring ultimate attention as well.
So the authentic person. Okay, that's why people like my podcast, because I'm so transparent with my fans. I mean, to give you an example, they sat with me through a health scare. Turns out the health scare was nothing, but I thought I was going to have another back surgery, and it turned out that it didn't need to happen. But because I was so authentic about it, people were saying rude to what I was saying. So it's all about the authentication of being you.
That's so true. And I think that's why you're seeing success with the podcast, because you're not trying to pretend to be, you know, anyone else, and you're sharing the reality of your life and your day-to-day life. And through that, you are, you know, you have people on as guests or whatever, and I'm honored to be one of them. But we get to learn about you as well, Wynn. And I think that's what's really connecting with your audience. And I would really encourage you to make sure that you keep that up, because that's the secret sauce, if there is any, to long-term success in any endeavor, but especially what I've seen with this influencer marketing and building a personal brand. It's that authenticity and that vulnerableness. And I think that you're doing a fantastic job with it, with this podcast.
Well, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. And now this is not about me, but what would be your favorite book that you go back to time and time again? It doesn't have to be a marketing book. It just has to be a book that you go back to time and time again.
Yeah, this is tough because it's actually quite difficult for me because there's so many good ones that I really enjoy. I would say that my most common answer for this question when it comes to business specifically is The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. I don't know if you've read that, but it's a fantastic exploration of the causes that most small businesses have such a hard time growing and scaling. And it kind of explores in some detail the differences between looking at a business as an extension of yourself as a freelancer. You know, if say you've started a business as a freelancer first and then you hire people, but you're still a practitioner, as in you have a hard time giving up control and responsibility of certain things. And the difficulties that brings when it comes to building a business and scaling, and then kind of the mindset that it requires to get out of that and to be willing to let others take responsibility for what they're doing. I think that at least at this moment in my life, that's what speaks to me the most, that process of trusting other people who work for you to really to do what it is that you believe that they're capable of, and not to need to always be, you know, in control of the final product, but understand that you hired people because of their skills and their expertise, and to trust them to come through with those skills and expertise. So, yeah, the E-Myth Revisited is my favorite, I believe, of at least of business-related books.
And what is your favorite podcast, if you have one?
Oh, man, this is such a tricky question. Well, besides Butterflies of Wisdom, of course, Wynn.
Yeah. You had to throw that in there for extra quality points. You had to throw that in there for extra quality points.
There are a lot that I really like, of course, in different categories. So if you're looking for the practical business advice of how to do specific things on social media, like what's the latest good stuff that you should be doing with Facebook ads or the Facebook algorithm or Twitter or whatever, if you're looking to dive into the details, I love Amy Porterfield's Online Marketing Made Easy. As far as podcasting as an art, I love the new S-Town from the people who made Serial and This American Life. They've really gotten at kind of a way to podcast that feels like it hasn't really been explored before to me, which is really exciting. My background is in music for media. I used to be a composer, and I would write film scores and that sort of thing. And so I have deep interest in the film and TV and music for film and TV. And this podcast, man, they're bringing a whole nother level of storytelling to it, to where it really feels like an art form that can compete with any of the other major art forms out there. So if you're interested in kind of expanding your horizons as far as shows that do things that I think other people aren't trying, S-Town is definitely one of the best.
I definitely agree. I definitely agree. S-Town is, well, of course, it's produced by NPR, but S-Town is shocking. I've listened to a little bit of it, so I know where you're going. But why did you leave film and music to pursue your dreams, geez, of being a brand ambassador and a brand influencer.
Interesting. Yeah. So my background is I went to college to study music composition. Immediately after that, I moved out to Los Angeles and spent a couple of years working in the film industry, writing music and other things to do with the music and the film industry. And during that time, I had always been fascinated by business and by marketing, and especially online digital marketing has really fascinated me for a long time. So after working on that for a while, I just got really interested in the podcast space, so I actually started my own. It's actually, I think it's still available online somewhere. It was called The Modern Musician Show. I don't add to it anymore, but it is still in iTunes, just sitting around waiting for musicians to listen to it if they want to. And I started that as an exploration of how to combine the two, how to combine music with business and make money. So the whole idea of being how do we help musicians not be starving artists, but rather teach them how to make good money with their craft. And so I ran that as a host for a while and just got really interested in the podcasting space, and through that, the influencer space, I ended up working with a few other podcasters to edit their audio and to do their brand communications as well. And eventually just found that I was enjoying the marketing and business side of things more than the music, and that I had a real knack for it, especially not necessarily, I don't know that I was a great host, certainly not a host like you, Wynn, but I found I was good in the background, you know, in producing it and in managing the processes and in promoting it. And then from that, I founded my company and we moved into this whole influencer focused media and advertising. So we do a combination of media production, podcast production or YouTube or whatever the case may be. And then also promotion and strategizing for, you know, how do we grow our influence and how do we put out the best content possible. And so now we work with a lot of, you know, a lot of large, podcasts and podcasters. We have clients like, Verizon and NPR. We work with people like Kai Lopez and other large influencers, and we've really found a real niche of taking that combination of media for influencers and strategizing around promotion around it. So that's kind of my story and how I got to where I am.
That's, yeah, because I was going to say music for film is not very, it's a very lucrative job. Let's just say that.
Well, it's a tricky industry. It definitely is. Anything in film is incredibly competitive and very cutthroat.
Yeah. Better to get out of it while you can.
And, you know, when I first got out of it, the first thing I did when I was 100% mobile and just working as a freelancer off my laptop, my wife and I traveled through America, you know, North America and Europe for about 10 months straight, which was really an awesome experience and something that I was only able to do because I had been able to, you know, be a cord cutter and work off of the laptop and everything. So anyone who has the opportunity to generate income on their laptop or on their phone, I highly recommend putting some effort into getting to the point where you are completely mobile, and then just take some time and go see some stuff. It's quite an amazing world that we live in right now, where you can actually continue to keep your income even while you're quote unquote on vacation and traveling the world.
Yes, it's so funny that you say that, because I'm going back to school. I have my original group leader certificate / associate degree in early childhood education, believe it or not. I am going back to school to study fashion journalism starting in September. So basically, I am going to become a freelance journalist here in the next 4 years. I'm officially leaving education. That was made official on June 27th. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to be leaving the confines of a job. And even though I do have a stable paycheck, the stable paycheck in teaching is smaller than it would be in freelance writing. Let me just tell you that. It's not the most stable paycheck in the whole world. But I am super excited to be going back to school and back to studying something I'm really passionate about. And of course, I'll keep you guys updated, including Colin. And so, what has been your favorite entrepreneurial moment since starting your company?
Well, first of all, congratulations on that. That's extremely exciting. And we're really living in kind of the freelancer economy, where that is, you know, that is the it's a business model, or it's a way of generating income that is now available to us that wasn't a while ago. So congratulations on doing that. That's a fantastic move. I'm very excited for you.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. So favorite entrepreneur moment. It's so hard. You know, it's funny that you say this. This might be a super indirect answer, but I hope that this is still satisfying. I've been thinking lately about why success and progress is so difficult. A lot of times, it feels like it's so much work. When we sit around and we will like use our brains and work really hard at, say, playing a game, a board game or something like that, or work really hard on our phone, playing a little phone game, you know, like Crossy Roads or whatever it is, and we're actually doing work, but we are not doing any income generating work. Why is that considered fun, play, and work considered just work? And I realized that I think it has to do with the feedback loop of you do work. If we're pretending like playing a little game on our phone is work, you do a little work, hopping along, trying to escape whatever it might be, or playing your board game, and then you have this instant, you did good or you did bad. You have this instant feedback loop that we can try to do better the next time, and it only takes a few seconds to know you did good or you did bad, or you did well or you did poorly, or you did whatever the case may be. You won, you lost. You got a little bit further this time, you didn't get as far this time. And I think that feedback loop, that's what we get obsessed with in games and in little iPhone games or on board games or whatever the case may be, sports, all of the quote-unquote fun things that we do, we like them because of that feedback loop. But work has the same feedback loop, and progress in life has the same feedback loop. It just takes longer. So we still work and work and work, and eventually we see results of whether we made good progress or maybe we accidentally took some steps backwards or whatever the case may be. It's the same thing as playing around and having fun, but the feedback loop is too long for us to consider it as fun or a game. And so that, I think, is why a lot of times it's so difficult to see progress in the work that you're doing. And to continue to, you know, up-level and get better, even though it's really easy for us to continually up-level and get better at little games that we play on our phone, say, or in sports, or whatever we do. So all of that to be far too roundabout, I'm sure, and say that for me, I think that keeping that in mind, the most valuable entrepreneur trait that I see in people who are making progress in their entrepreneurial journey is the patience to let that feedback loop play out and to take it into consideration and then change what they're doing to match what they learned from that feedback loop of did this work well, did this not work well. And so it's hard for me to point at a moment because my highest, most exciting, most fun moments are when that feedback loop comes back and I see, oh, yes, this worked. Great. But that's not where the progress came from. The progress came from the work that got to the moment when, say, we landed, you know, Verizon as a client. That would have been one of my, you know, if I wanted to point at like a high point in my life, as far as my entrepreneurial journey, that would be it. But it was the journey to get there that was actually the most valuable, and that people need to think more about. The feedback is the moment at the top of the mountain that you feel fantastic about. But in reality, we're going to be constantly going through this cycle of doing a lot of work and finding out if it worked or not, and finding out if it made us better or if we accidentally made a mistake or whatever the case may be. And so I really try to think of it as a broader cycle than a big high moment, because I think if more people thought about it as if it were a game, which might sound kind of funny to say, but if more people thought about it that way, we would enjoy what we did more, and we would enjoy the progress. And that progress is what is kind of the high points for me, and it's all about that feedback loop. So does that answer the question? I don't know. That was very roundabout, like philosophical.
Yes, it does. And it gave me a great perspective. So, AKA, you're saying to me, think of freelance buying as Candy Crush. You're saying
exactly.
Think of freelance buying as Candy Crush. That I will have to use that line. I will have to now start implementing that line, because you're right. If we spent as much time with work as we do playing Candy Crush or on these games on our phones, on our iPads, on every which way, we would have a great life. But you're right. When you say that, I think that people don't think of that. They think, oh, Candy Crush is so fun, but now I have to get back to work. Why not think in the way of, let's make work a game here?
Because if you think about it,
feedback loop.
Right. And I think that it's surprisingly close to the same. It's surprisingly close to the same task. You know what I mean? You're sitting, like, say, if you compare writing, sitting at a computer writing, with sitting at a computer playing a game. Yes, maybe there's more eye candy, but either way, what you enjoy is the progress of the game. And that same progress is happening in real life when you're working. You just don't see it as clearly, but you can imagine it. And if you can kind of remind yourself about that, I think it helps a lot. Turn the work into less work and more fun.
Well, that's a great analogy. And where can people find you, and how can people get a hold of you, and how can people begin working with you?
Sure. So my company's website is Cast Media. Cast is K-A-S-T, castmedia.com. We actually have a newsletter for podcasters that kind of looks at the weekly news about the podcast industry, and also marketing news about the podcast industry. And that can be found at news.castmedia.com. Again, cast with a K. And, you know, I'm on Twitter, at Colin P. Thompson.
I know you are.
So,
and I retweeted an article that you guys should check out that I'm now investigating, that Colin actually did. He did a case study about how to go from 0 downloads to 60,000 downloads in a week. Am I correct in saying that? And you did this case study, and that's how I found you.
Oh, wow, great. Yeah, that's an example of, we worked with a podcast that was just starting out. They were doing a true crime investigation. And, yeah, we actually went from zero at launch, of course, to 1 million downloads in 3 weeks. And it ended up being really popular. So the case study is kind of about the marketing tactics that we used to get there.
Well, you guys should go check out that case study. And of course, that's on Colin's website. And of course, we'll have all of Colin's information in the show notes. And before I let Colin go, though, I'm going to let Colin ask me a couple of questions about anything that he wants to ask me about.
Awesome. Hey, I love that you include this in the podcast. This is so much fun. It's like I get to be the host for a second.
Yeah.
So, Wynn, why did you start the podcast? What was the initiative behind this podcast?
I wrote a book at the age of 23. That book shot to number one on Amazon. Complete strangers started asking me, how do you do all this with cerebral palsy? I said, uh-oh, they're opening up a can of worms that I am not going to close. And at the time, I thought, okay, why not do a podcast with influential leaders that I want to learn from, like you, and infuse my story with it. So we tried YouTube. My team and I tried YouTube. And then one day I had a fan literally tell me that she couldn't download the audio of my YouTube show to listen to it while multitasking. And so that's what how this podcast really came to be, but how my motivational speaking really came to be. And you guys don't know this, but I had a back surgery go horribly long, and I was in the middle of PT learning how to walk again. And I thought, well, since we're at this point learning how to walk again using a walker, why not turn it into a motivational speaking career and speak about cerebral palsy? Unbeknownst to me, I was going to have a second stop in Down the Roses moment, which I fully admit in I Come a Win, my original book, which still can be found on Amazon to this day. And that's how the book and podcast came to be. Thank you very much. Second stop and smell the roses moment. So to give you a long roundabout answer, that's how I came up with this podcast.
Interesting. That's fascinating. And how long ago did it start?
I've been doing this for 4 years. I've been doing some sort of version of this for 4 years, but I just got into podcasting maybe a year to 2 years ago.
Okay. What do you think has been the best thing that's come out of this whole podcast experience for you over the years?
Over the years, it's getting a boy. It's getting rid of a speech impediment quickly. Because when you have to interview people, you get rid of, you improve your cerebral palsy like there's no tomorrow. Because when you have to interview people, you can't think about how you sound and putting the omnis and likes and all that good jazz in a podcast. So what I try and do to the best of my abilities, it's be authentic, be natural, and just be honest with my fans and say, look, I have cerebral palsy. You can either put up with the stigma of disabilities and let's break it together or no.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think it's part of what our conversation was about earlier, which is the authenticity. And, I think, I think that that really, really connects with your audience, your willingness to put yourself out there and to do something that maybe was uncomfortable at first, but you've gotten really good at it. And it also shows one of the best, I think, strategies for improving at anything is to throw yourself into the deep end, you know?
Into the deep end of the pool.
Exactly. Exactly. It's something that most people, I think, are too scared to do, but it's the fastest way to learn and probably the best way to learn.
No, and most people say, I want to write a book, and most people say, I want to do a podcast. I say, just do it. Just do it. Get the book off your bucket list. I'm sorry, but just do it. I'm working on my 8th, 9th, and hopefully my 10th book. They're all coming out together, and they're all different stuff going on in my life right now. So I'm working on my 8th and 9th book. They're coming out simultaneously, I hope. And then I'm working on my 10th as we speak to do this interview. And then, yeah, so I've been in the self-publishing industry since the age of 23. And if someone came knocking on my door with a book deal, I would seriously consider it, but they would have to give me creative freedoms because I don't follow the rules well. I'm too creative for that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I think you are a real, you know, doer, and a lot of people spend all of their time talking about things, and if they had just put all of the time into doing that they spent talking, they could have accomplished more things. So congratulations on everything you've been able to accomplish by just jumping in and doing it.
Thank you for that. And I'm hoping to hit the New York Times bestseller list by the time I'm 35 or maybe even sooner than that with one of my books, because that would help the work I'm doing all the way around.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I think with your attitude and your willingness to jump in and do things, there's no way you're not going to hit that. And not only that, you've had this podcast going for a long time. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with Lewis Howser at all or not, but he tells the story of having that dream also of wanting to hit the New York Times bestsellers list. He started his podcast a long time ago, and part of it was actually the strategy for A, building a following, yes, but B, also connecting with influencers, you know, interviewing people in every show and connecting with them so that when he was ready to really make a big push for that New York Times bestsellers list, he had built up all of these connections and all of these people that were happy to, you know, send traffic to the book and to drive, you know, and it worked. He got, I forget, number five or number four, something on the New York Times bestsellers list with his book that came out. And I think he credits the podcast as kind of the leading force behind how that happened.
Well, isn't that amazing? Via podcast really does work. Via podcast really does work. And being an influencer marketer and teaming up with people like Colin really does work. And I hope you guys enjoying another fabulous episode with Colin and I, and influencer marketing is here to stay. Podcasting is here to stay. And then I would just like to thank Colin for his time, and I hope that he shares this episode out so that people understand what we're doing as part of our branding and as part of influencer marketing.
Absolutely. Wynn, thank you so much for having me on the show. I love what you're doing.
You are so welcome.
If you couldn't tell from my answers, I love what you're doing and I love your attitude, and I want to encourage you to keep up the fantastic work, and congratulations on your move to freelancing, and looking forward to hearing updates on the podcast as you go forward.
I will give you guys updates. And again, I thank you, Colin, for coming on this podcast. And this podcast has actually been sponsored by KITTER, KITTER, and Twitter is a desktop app for Twitter. You or they can compose the tweet, but what's cool about them is they put the trending hashtag with it so you guys don't get lost in the heat. And I would like to thank them for their generous support of this podcast. And let's just keep making the world a better place and sharing our messages. And thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Lynn.